comment or voice of answer to questions.
It's a role reversal. The Lord is asking questions and the devotee is giving answers. But Ramananda Roy understood, I'm a puppet, you're the puppeteer, you can make me dance, you can make me speak, you can make me do whatever you want. And even he said, there are subject matters that are coming out of my mouth that I have no understanding of. But you're making me speak this way and you're having fun. You're enjoying this activity. So in a similar manner, Haridas Thakur, being the Acharya of the Holy Name, is being asked by Lord Chaitanya, who is the deliverer of the Holy Name, to explain the glories of the Holy Name. So one of the things that Haridas Thakur says to Lord Chaitanya is that chanting of the Holy Name must be side by side with proper sambandha gyan. Without proper sambandha gyan, one is not going to get the full fruit or benefit of chanting. So this is one of the spiritual principles. That is, hearing about, as we've been spending some time, hearing about the glories of the Holy Name, like the first presentation on from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these seven wonders. Just hearing about them helps get the full benefit of chanting. Having a proper understanding of the name, its potencies, its special qualities, its special munificence, helps. We can say, in contrast, there are people, let's say, that the first time that I heard chanting was from a Broadway musical called Hair, H-A-I-R. In the late 60s, it was a parody on the counterculture of America, the hippie counterculture that had big hair, so they called it Hair. And one of the scenes in the Broadway musical was some people with skull caps and, you know, dhotis on came out and on the Broadway stage and started chanting Hare Krishna. There's benefit. The kind of benefit that they derived, the actors, and the audience derived, is described in the sixth canto Bhagavatam. Even musical, for musical performance purposes, it's very powerful. That chanting is sufficient to free one from all sinful reactions. Like Ajamila became free from all sinful reactions from his particular type of chanting. So the musical kind also. But that's not the full benefit. Or in another modern example is the yoga circuit, where many people, I'm sure you're aware, you know, to what degree it goes on is another thing, but it's very popular. Kirtan is very popular. I remember almost 10 years ago, the area where the Woodstock event took place, a big rock concert event in upstate New York, became known 10 years ago as the Kirtan Belt. 10 years ago. And today, I don't know to what extent it's developed here in Seattle or in Portland, but hugely popular. But people don't know what it is. One of the devotees that does that service, he shared with me one day, I finally found somebody that actually has bhakti. One of them actually shared with me that he sings thinking it's pleasing to Krishna, because the other people don't have a clue. They like it. Other people like it. Some people derive some income from it. You know, it's either they like it or they get some money from it, but you don't know what it is. Or if they have something of an idea, it's an impersonal idea. But they're not going to derive the full benefit of chanting. So one of the special features, special spiritual principles of chanting is it's important for us to know the glories of the holy name. Nam nam akari bahuda. Nijasarva shaktis. Krishna has manifested innumerable names. And in each and every one of these names, all of his spiritual potencies. We discussed a little bit how important it is to understand the inconceivable nature of Krishna's potencies. So, something like this. There's chanting, and there's one result that people understand, and another result that people don't understand. Right within the ten offenses against the holy name. For example, thinking that the chanting of Krishna's name and the chanting of the names of the demigods are equal. That's an offense. So not knowing that, persons may think in the yoga circuit, they don't know what they're doing. They're just, you know, sing this name, sing that name. It's all fun. But it's an offense against the holy name. Or thinking that the purpose of the holy name is to counteract, it's a karmakanda activity meant to neutralize the reactions of their sins. And thinking in that way is an offense. When it's as a fruitive activity, it's a good activity meant to neutralize mistakes made in the course of one's activity of life. So, one of the spiritual principles of the holy name is it's important for us, chanters, to know what the glories of the holy name are. We may not, it's another offense, to intimately share those with persons who are faithless. But we should know what they are, and in the proper atmosphere, share that, understand that amongst ourselves. Another one of the spiritual principles related to chanting is from the verse in Padma Purana, Nama Chintamani Krishna, the name of Krishna, acts like touchstone. That is, whatever the holy name comes in contact with, knowingly or unknowingly, that place becomes purified. I'll share a couple of little experiences. One of them is from New Jersey. There's a family, Dugga family, going back many, many, many years, when they have two boys, and when they were very young, they started this 24-hour kirtan program, and then became an annual thing that the Dugga family 24-hour kirtan. When their kids went off to college and finally graduated, so many years later, so many years of 24-hour kirtan, they finally sold their big house and got a little house because they had gotten married and went off. So. The first year they moved to a new house, they had the 24-hour care time, and the next day after the 24-hour care time, they had a maid, someone in a new area that had never been to their house, and they had a maid come in and clean up the mess after the 24-hour care time. And they went off to do some shopping, whatever they want. And when they came back, the maid was singing Hare Krishna. And they were very amazed. They said, you know, where did you learn this? And she said, I don't know. I just being in the house, I just started coming out. I don't even know what it means. Far out, huh? Or here's another one. As a very, very new devotee, 40-something years ago, but very new to Krishna consciousness, the first summer that I spent in a temple was in the Boston Temple. And we had Harinam every day, for 6 to 8 hours every day, right at the Boston Common, which is very near to the downtown area where Washington Street, and it's a really great spot for Harinam because on lunch hour everybody comes to the park and it's right at the corner of the park, and then the red line and the green line, two of the subway lines in Boston, they have their stops right at the same corner of the Boston Common. So it's fantastic. The place is flooded with people at lunch hour. So there was one man that worked on Washington Street. He came out at lunch hour. He never even ate lunch. He just came and harassed the devotees. And he was an ordinary harasser. He was literally a madman. So my first experience with him was, I was a new bhakta, and they could tell because I had my hair and my dungarees and I didn't look like everybody else, and I was a new guy because he came out every day. So that we had a system where we would chant for half an hour and persons would distribute invitations to the temple and back to Godhead magazines, and then we'd switch. And when it was time to switch, Sasrup Maharaj was the temple president, and it was Das Adhikari at the time. He came and gave me a whole stack of magazines and some cards. And I said, but I'm a new guy. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what to do. He just said, pointed, said, go. But, go. So I went. And so the madman came, and his practice was, especially with new people, he came running up, and as soon as I handed the magazine to people, he'd start screaming and screeching at the top of his lungs, this is awful, don't take that literature. And he'd grab the magazine and throw it on the ground and start jumping up and down on the magazine. And he just kept tapping 3 or 4 times, and I didn't know what to do. So I went to Jai Dwait Maharaj, who was in the temple on Harinam, and asked him what to do. He said, don't worry, just keep going, I'll take care of it. Okay. So next time, same thing happened, and Jai Dwait Maharaj cupped his hands around his mouth like this, and at the top of his lungs started shouting Maha Mantra. And the man looked at him and put his hands on his ears and went running down the street. And Jai Dwait Maharaj, with his big smile, turned and said, he quoted the verse, you know, the devotees drive great bliss and satisfaction, and the demons flee here and there. By the end of the summer, that man was still crazy, but from hearing the Harinam party for 1 hour every day, he did just the opposite. He would come running up to people that were receiving the magazine. Take this magazine. It's the best thing you've ever seen. It will save your life. And he was, you know, mad as a madman it can be. But he got changed just from hearing the holy name. And so many other. So even if someone is inimical, it's just that the holy name acts as touchstone. Now, we don't encourage people to be offensive, but even in those kinds of circumstances. There's other descriptions, but I won't go there. It acts as touchstone. Touchstone is such that whatever it comes in contact with, it transforms that which it comes in contact with without changing itself. So, Nama Chintamani Krishna. Then, the next line is Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. So, question. How are we to understand something that's fully spiritual if it's beyond our experience? And the answer is we can't. It has to be within our experience. Otherwise, we can't understand it. Like, take the example of prasadam. So, you can talk about prasadam and how it tastes. You can talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, but until you taste it, you won't know what it tastes like. But you take some prasadam and then, oh. And some people don't even know it's prasadam, and they somehow become very attracted. There's something about prasadam that's not ordinary, although they may not know what that is. Maybe we were examples of that. I met someone since I've been here in Seattle who described like that. You know, he was from his college days. He went to the temple and got prasadam because he was poor. What's his name? The apple. Yeah, it was like that. And it, you know, had great appreciation. Maybe some of us, same thing. So, now how do we understand the transcendental nature of the holy name that phrase means Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha in the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada dedicates practically, well, a good part of the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam to explaining the word Chaitanya. Of course, his audience is whoever's going to be the reader of Srimad Bhagavatam, but so to explain Lord Chaitanya, what's the meaning of the word Chaitanya? So what are we going to understand about the fully conscious form of transcendental mellows? It's high. It's too high for us. But that's what the verse says. Padma Purana. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. This is in this particular age of Kali, this is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that we are to realize him by. I mean, he appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he delivers the Maha Mantra. And within this Maha Mantra, the name of Krishna is none different than Krishna. And it's the form, Rasa Vigraha, it's the form of Rasa, of transcendental mellows. It's Krishna's form. So, it's a feature, it's a spiritual reality of the holy name that we can't know. But if you remember what I was discussing earlier about Shabda we can't know by our intellectual power anyway. It's something that's going to take the gradual purification and Vidya Vadu Jivanam, the awakening of transcendental knowledge, and as that matures, realization. And realization of our relationship with Krishna. Realization that the holy name bestows rasa. It's very high. It's very accessible for anybody. Children, uneducated people that don't know what it means. is accessible to anybody. The holy name is so merciful, and yet it bestows the highest thing. These glories of the holy name are helpful. Stay stronger. They're necessary for us to receive the full benefit of our chanting, our regular devotional chanting. The whole of the spiritual world, not only our identity and our rasa, but the whole of the spiritual world. Krishna himself, which means the whole of the spiritual world, can be manifest. It's described, for example, this is for elevated chanters like Rupa Goswami, but there's a description in Bhakti Ratnakar of what Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami experienced when they were chanting. They experienced, as Haridas Thakur says, Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Leela in that sequence. Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Leela. That is, like we were discussing a little bit before, the real purpose or focus when chanting is to go to the holy name. I just read one quote where somebody was asking Srila Prabhupada, it was Prahlada Nandaswami, was asking Srila Prabhupada about pastimes of Krishna appearing in the mind, because he has an incredible memory. Incredible memory. He has memorized not just all the verses of Bhagavad Gita, he's memorized chapters of Krishna books. Just from memory, he can recite them. Because he has that kind of a memory. Brahmachari. So, pastimes from Krishna book would appear in his mind, and he asked Prabhupada, is that something desirable or undesirable? And Prabhupada's something like that. And Prabhupada's reply was, your attention should go to the holy name. If those things appear, that's okay, but don't take your attention away from the holy name. This is a tip or a technique in chanting. Whatever helps you bring your attention to the holy name, bring your attention to the holy name. But not that those things then replace your attention to the holy name. Seeing a picture of Krishna, maybe a favorite picture of Krishna, that's okay. But keep your attention to the holy name. And if you do that, then the form of Krishna will appear in your mind. That's what Haridas Thakur says. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, the form of Krishna appears in your mind, just automatically, because you're chanting nicely. And from the form of the Lord, then the qualities of the Lord. And from the form and qualities of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord. So in Bhakti Ratnakara it's described that Rupa Goswami was chanting the holy name of the Lord, and the pastimes of Krishna would appear in his mind. And the literatures that he wrote describing pastimes of Krishna include pastimes of Krishna that appeared in his mind. And they're not imaginative, poetic, Shakespearean-like, something, you know, creative fiction. It's pastimes that appeared in his mind. And those pastimes are as real, transcendentally real, as the pastimes that Krishna showed to everybody when he appeared in this world and recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam and other of Vyasadeva literature, other transcendental literature. It's not you or me, it's Rupa Goswami who has this intimate relationship with Krishna, and the pastimes appeared in his mind. So when it's like having tasted prasadam, then you know what it tastes like. You can describe what the taste is. The other person is going to know until they taste it, although you can describe it. The experience of Rupa Goswami was his reward or his the gift given to him by Krishna that he appeared in that pure heart. You make your heart pure, Krishna will be attracted. Krishna will appear there. With on the strength of your love for Krishna, Krishna will appear there. And that's one of the spiritual realities of the holy name. We're not there, but we should know that that's one of the spiritual realities. And that another glory of the holy name or spiritual fact about the holy name is the realization that Krishna imparts is proportionate to one's faith. I mentioned this example from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. The marketplace of the holy name opened by Lord Chaitanya, and he freely gave the pure holy name to those who paid the price of faith. Some faith. It didn't say how much faith. Just some faith. Here's the pure holy name. A nice scriptural example of this that I recently read is an eighth canto of the Bhagavatam in relation to Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj is the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. And being the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, he was also of the Daitya dynasty, as was Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj was the king of the Daityas, and he was very powerful, and so the Daityas, by military strength, conquered the demigods. So he was ruling the heavens as a Daitya. So the demigods went to Lord Vishnu. Oh, please get us your kingdom back. Help. So Lord Vishnu said, I will help you get your kingdom back. He appeared as a dwarf brahmana and then appeared before Bali Maharaj requesting at one of the yajnas he was doing performed by Shukracharya. You know the story. 3 paces of land. Bali looked at his short legs and said, 3 paces of land? What are you going to do? Your legs are so short. Well, I'll give you much more. No, I'm a Brahmin, I don't need much more. Just 3 paces of land. Anyway, throughout the course of the unfolding of that Leela, so many strong punishments were made. He was put in a position where he had to violate his spiritual master, Shukracharya, at whatever the risk for that might be. He lost his entire kingdom by a trick of Lord Vamanadeva. He was insulted as having... there's a verse spoken by Vamana before everybody. Well, all these things happened, and then he said to Vamana, you promised me 3 paces of land, and you only gave me 2. So you're a violator of Dharma. You're a sinful man. I'm going to arrest you. Arrest this man. To tie him up like a common criminal. So with ropes tied all around. He's Bali Maharaj. He's this great powerful emperor. They tied him up. And there's a description that then in the Bhagavatam that many personalities came and voiced their opinion. Oh, this is really wrong. He surrendered everything to Vamana. Look, he just tied him up like a common criminal. And Prahlad Maharaj's grandfather came and said, no, this is very good. Vamana knows what he's doing. He didn't give him 3 paces of land. And back and forth, different arguments. And then finally Vamana spoke. And there's a very beautiful verse where he says, essentially, I was testing him. And I wanted to show the world, just see the quality of this person. Born in a Daitya family, and gives all these, discredits. He gained the control of the universe, knowingly he surrendered it all to me. And then I insulted him, calling him a sinful man. I tied him up. He violated his spiritual master's instruction not to give this three steps of land to me. And so many difficulties a normal human being wouldn't even have been able to survive. But he didn't deviate one fraction from his commitment to his vow. How much he upheld truth. He is such a great personality. I see myself as his devotee. The Lord speaking. So, in the purport, Prabhupada explains, sometimes to increase the dependence upon the Supreme Lord or show the glories of his devotee, Krishna puts his devotee in difficulty. But that because the devotee is very faithful, Krishna gives them the strength to surpass the difficulty that Krishna puts them in. So when we have faith in the holy name, we get realizations that persons that don't have faith don't have access to. Or even in our own experience, there may be times when our faith moves up and down because it's not so properly based. It's circumstantial more than transcendental. So we'll get different realizations at different times. But the glory of the holy name is the fullness of Krishna to the extent that a tiny living entity can realize the unlimited. The fullness of the mercy of Krishna can be experienced proportionate to our faith. And thus Haridas Thakur had such realization because he had such faith. We're going to later be hearing something about Haridas Thakur, and stick around for the evening. I think you'll appreciate it very much. But he, because of his strong faith in the holy name, his realizations were otherworldly. And his empowerment was otherworldly in so many different ways because the Lord gave reciprocated with him. So this is a spiritual reality of the holy name. Proportionate to our faith, we'll have realizations. And when things become difficult, sometimes they become difficult, that's a really good time to strengthen your faith. The holy name, another of the spiritual realities, is it discloses not only who we are, but it discloses our rasa with Krishna. It goes something like this. Every living entity is eternally part of Krishna. We've forgotten that reality. So the first stage of realization for a soul is, besides what we aren't, we're not this body, but we're an eternal, fragmental part of the Supreme Lord. If you read Sri Brahma Samhita very carefully, you'll see that's the first of the realizations of Lord Brahma, because he's searching, who am I? And he realizes his identity as a spiritual entity, spiritual being, not just Lord Brahma. Then he continues with his mantra, his Gayatri mantra chanting, that's his tapa, and then he realizes his rasa. Our Lord Brahma, who is the speaker of the person of in Sri Brahma Samhita, his rasa with Krishna is an eternal maidservant. When you read second canto Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a different Lord Brahma, and his rasa with Krishna is friendship. They're different rasas, and every living entity, ourselves included, we have an eternal rasa, our relationship with Krishna. That is, the fullness of that can be realized simply through chanting. And how are you going to find that out? Not by taking a postgraduate course in philosophy and religion or something like that. It's not by intellectual endeavor. Not by speculation. It's by purification and revelation, and the holy name is, it's a glory. Now, we're millions of light years away from that, but that's the potential. That's the holy name bestows that. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. And as mentioned, Krishna reveals himself, and with that, the whole of the spiritual world. The pastimes of Krishna become accessible, not just reading them in a page of a book, but experiencing within our heart through the chanting of the holy name. How merciful is the holy name and the process that we've been given. How we regard the holy name, something similar to a previous point, but how we regard the holy name will determine a lot of how we approach the process of chanting itself. If we have if we greatly value something, we'll treat that something differently. You know, the Sanatan and the Touchstone. Sanatan Goswami, and someone came along saying, "Sanatan Goswami, you're a wonderful sadhu, and sadhus are always very detached. Are you here? I hear you have a touchstone. Can you give that in charity to me?" You know the story. It was in the garbage. It's in that pile of rubbish over there. You can find it. And sure enough, it was there, and sure enough, it transformed things into gold. And then the man came back and said, "Well, you got that in the rubbish. You must have something more valuable." And the holy name. If as we regard with value the holy name above all other things, to the degree that we can enter into that, not just say it or read it or think it, but enter into that consciousness, value the holy name, then the glories of the holy name, the realization of the holy name becomes ours. Like these Shikshastakam verses or parts of the first verse, Vidyavadu Jivanam. Knowledge becomes revealed, realization becomes revealed, everything becomes revealed. Potentially, because everything is there in the holy name. In fact, the holy name and Krishna are non-different. Abhinatvam nama namino. And with all of this speaking about the importance of faith, Krishna is independent. That is, by that I mean, these glories are existing whether we have faith in them or not. Say it the other way around. It's not that because we imagine something because we want to imagine something fanciful or hyperbole or exaggeration, and we get all excited about something, and then we think this is real. But it's not like that. That the holy name has all of these potencies and capacities and glories, faithful or not. And still the holy, faithful or not, still the holy name is approachable. Not only approachable, at once appears. There's a little section in Mahabharata where Satyavati is told by Vyasadeva, when Vyasadeva is born, because Parashara Muni, being knowing, having the acumen that he had, He did an astrological calculation while crossing the river with Satyavati, rowing the boat. And it was a time for an incarnation of the Lord to appear. So he told Satyavati, "Why don't you become the mother? And I'll be the father." And she said, "Oh, we're not married." She said, "No, that's okay. You won't lose your virginity." Okay, but I'll be walking around pregnant. Well, no, I'll make an arrangement so the child will be born immediately. Well, how can we have any relation? We're right in the middle of the river. Well, I'll build an island by mystic power and make the island invisible. No one can see, and don't worry. He solved all of her objections. So Vyasadeva was born of Parashramuni and Satyavati. And when Vyasadeva was born, he was fully mature. And with folded palms, he said to his mother, "My dear mother, I'm eternally indebted to you. I'm going to go now and perform my austerities, but if at any time you want me, just call my name and immediately I'll come." So when she was in difficulty, Satyavati was in difficulty because her two sons, Chitrangada and Vichitaviri, had both died. There was no son to carry forward the dynasty. So she just called Vyasadeva. It was, for begetting a child with the two wives of Vichitaviri. She convinced the two wives of Vichitaviri that her son, because it was permitted in Dwarpa Yuga, her son, they were thinking Bhishma is her son. Or the son of Santanu. So the equivalent of her son would become potentially the father of their child. Bhishma Dev said, "No, I've taken a vow. I can't break my vow. But there's another brother, Vyas." So, just calling his name, immediately he was there. "Yes, mother. I've been in the middle of performing very severe austerity, so my body is all covered with... I'm not clean, and I smell bad, and I've been doing all these... Let me finish my austerities, then I'll come back." No. Anything could happen. You need to produce children. So, just by the name and the object named, when it comes to something that's transcendental, the name and the object named, abhinatvam nama namino, are the same. Immediately Krishna is there. And nitya sarva shaktis, all of his potencies. Even if one doesn't understand. What to speak of if one understands? So, the message here is something that will help our chanting in general and something that can happen for our chanting tomorrow, 64 rounds, to strengthen your entering nicely into the holy name. You can contemplate like this first Shikshastakam verse. That's why it's there. Glories of the holy name, or this class that I'm presenting now. The spiritual realities of the holy name. It's not something ordinary. I don't know what will happen to this, cabin, or whatever they call it, hall, the result of our coming here year after year after year. Once a year. But even matter becomes affected just by the chanting of the holy name. Have any of you been to 26 Second Avenue? And when you enter into that place, do you feel something? It's not ordinary. It's just, it's wood and plaster and it's like anything else. But because of the intensive presence of Srila Prabhupada and kirtans with him, it's not ordinary. I visited, for my first time, maybe the last time in this lifetime, I visited Hawaii in December. I went to pay a visit to Vatsal Prabhu, who you know from Houston, but he was in Hawaii as the president there for a few years, and he was doing a fantastic job. I was just so much appreciating what he was doing. He was inviting me, so I agreed to go. And by the time I agreed to go, he had to move, so he wasn't there. But where I stayed in the Hawaii temple, a place where I'd never been before, I saw one devotee going down the hall, and he went into and closed the door. It was ended up being Prabhupada's quarters. So I looked, you know, because it was the end of the building, at the end of the upper floor. So I asked him, is it okay to go into Prabhupada's quarters? And he said yes. And just walked into the room. And it was this wave of, I don't know what to say, Prabhupada's presence or spiritual potency. It's just the room. But because Prabhupada spent so much time there translating and working on his Bhaktivedanta purports, meeting the people and so forth, the spiritual vibrancy was there. So the chanting of the holy name works like that. If it works on a place, it's certainly going to work on our heart. So even if nothing else, just tomorrow by spending the time together with other Vaishnavas who are trying as we're trying to focus on the holy name, something's going to happen. At least purification will happen. And depending upon where our faith is and how we're investing our consciousness and our appreciation of what this holy name is and all of those other factors, it's a permanent asset for us spiritually. So throw yourself into it. It seems like what's going to happen is something like what happened last year. The number of people that are here will double because some people can't get Friday off of work and they'll come tomorrow cold, I mean, you know, not having been prepared like this, and try to chant 64 rounds. Yes, something like that. It's happened in the past years. But part of what will help them do that is all of you who are a little more prepared. Like Prema Trangini's presentation on preparing the heart. So this is kind of like that, to help prepare your hearts for plunging deeply into the holy name. So I'll just say a few things about that and we'll and see if there's some discussion. To help you prepare for tomorrow, besides what we're doing during the day today, anticipation, setting the mind. So this is an instruction from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is not only for tomorrow morning, but your daily chanting of the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends that in the evening, three things before you take rest. One, consider what went well, what did not go well in the course of your execution of devotional service that day. Briefly, just a scan. And then those things that did not go well, second, is then to commit to try to improve. And then the third is to anticipate the next morning when you can rise early in the morning and immerse yourself in the Sarvatma Snapanam, the cleansing of the soul from the holy name. And if you do that on a daily basis or starting this evening, something happens. There's that when you take rest at night, whatever thought is there in your mind commonly will appear first thing in the morning. And if, especially like this, if the goal, the chanting of the holy name is our primary means of deliverance, the Yuga Dharma. Anticipating the opportunity of many devotees coming together for that same focused purpose, it's very powerful. It could very easily be the best round you chant all year long is tomorrow morning and tomorrow during the day, just from being in this packed up, focused effort. Two or three other things. One is, as far as possible, of course we'll see what happens with the weather, but try to stay indoors, try to stay together. If you need to go for a walk, fine. Commonly, it's found devotees that do that, the quality slips away, and then you come back, and you're back in the association of the devotees, and it picks up again. It doesn't always work that way, but it will enhance the experience for everyone if we stay focused together. It's unique. Any day you can go for a walk, not in any day you can be in the association of many devotees commonly chanting together. And you'll feel strength from others who are experiencing, you don't know what, but something in interaction, reciprocation with Krishna and His holy name. It's powerful. Another, I'll mention this again tomorrow morning, but something that's valuable or really important is mona or silence. It's powerful. It's a little difficult, especially with children, but the urge to speak is, you know, really drives people a lot. So we're used to doing it freely. Tomorrow, from the time that you come, try to observe mona. If you have to speak something, especially, you know, in the early part related to the kitchen service or something like that, do it discreetly. And after the morning class, breakfast time, the rest of the day, mona. Please observe that. You'll find it gives extra strength and it makes the atmosphere more focused. It's a disservice to the others to not observe that, so please observe that. You'll find it valuable. Some of the things, it's a little difficult to this isn't a standard format for a japa retreat. You know, one day, prepare, the next day, 64 rounds. It's not normally ideal. We're doing it because you're all busy people and that's all you can do, so okay. But the things that we've spoken about today, try to take some of them as tools. One of them, you notice all around, they're Mahamantra sheets or posters. This is a practice that some of our Vaishnava acharyas have done to help stay focused on the holy name. It's called Trataka. As you're saying the name, you see the name. Hare Krishna, and your eyes follow the mantra. It can help you focus on the name instead of your mind wandering. So if you find that your mind is wandering, that's one option for you. Or notes that you've taken today, things that you've heard about, something that's inspired you, perhaps, you know, this Shikshastakam one and going through, looking at the name through that lens, or at the beginning, prayers, stop at intervals, read something that's inspirational in relation to chanting, whatever you feel will work best for you. Try to be very focused on not just completing 64 rounds, but doing so in a quality way. Maximum attention to the sound of Krishna's holy name that you're chanting. think that we'll do for now. Any discussion? We've gone through very quickly on a number of things, so I don't know. Certainly you're free to speak something on some of the earlier classes, because we had to move quickly, because we started late.
Regarding our children, definitely we learn a lot of things, we try to apply in our day-to-day japan. And when it comes to nurturing our children and helping them grow in chanting also, it sometimes is a big challenge based on the fact that firstly we ourselves are struggling in our chanting. And now we have the responsibility, added responsibility of assisting our children to do quality japa. So, what advice Maharaj is there for helping us to help our children to do japa nicely?
That's the Air Force Base. That's a broad question. So I'll give a broad answer. First and most important is as parents, setting an example and creating an atmosphere day to day. And not by forcing, but by example. Then another is the numbers and the kinds of distracting things that as a family you have available to your children. When there's distracting things, especially, you know, electronic games and things like that, it makes the mind mush. And it's very difficult for a mushy mind to have any attraction for chanting. So, I'm recommending, you're asking, so I'm recommending engaging in activities as a family with your children or your children with other children that are devotional in nature so that they're feeling satisfied, and in that satisfaction, choose to not go the direction of mind-numbing things, because mind-numbing things will take away any attraction or spiritual practice or spiritual anything other than, you know, that which is seen as fun, and then it's run doing the next thing. You're like, goes on. Another is something that the Seattle Temple and the Portland Temple have nice examples of, and that's strong spiritual programs for children starting at a very young age. And when the parents take the time to provide that for the children collectively, that strengthens their attraction for spiritual activity. Now, I know some children that have been through that, not here, but elsewhere, and somehow the attraction for japa wasn't easy. But because those things that I previously mentioned were there, and one added ingredient, when there's been some relationship with a mentor or a spiritual superior or a spiritual master, then something clicks. And all of that rich deposit from the other activities that weren't just chanting, some attraction for chanting awakens. It may take some maturity, in other words. But if that is invested carefully with your children and the community's children in general, then it's going to bear fruit. Not the kind of fruit where it's forced, but where it grows of its own accord. And then, commonly, when someone amongst that group of peers, it works both ways. When someone amongst that group of peers develops some liking for chanting and other types of other expressions of devotional activity, it tends to draw others to that. As much as the other also, I say the other way, is somebody goes to some low position and does some unfortunate things. And there's this saying amongst parents and educators of children that as water seeks the lowest level, children do also. If somebody's doing something that's, you know, on the lower scale, they want to know why I can't do that too. They're doing it, and it's just like a broken record, saying, I want to do it. Sometimes that goes on. Unless there's a greater happiness, and there's other examples amongst the children and relationships with not just the parents, but also other adults that are caring and extend themselves other than just the parent-child relationship. So in other words, a community. To raise a child takes a village, as the saying goes. So others that show good examples in addition to within the home. But it starts in the home. And it's a big topic. Anything else? Yes.
You quote from the Sikshastakam that Krishna has unlimited names and all the potencies are invested in them.
Yes.
So sometimes the body, in order to get protection from the holy names,
in order to get protection,
protection from the holy names,
yeah.
Sometimes there is that the Krishna Kavacha.
Sure.
Or so. But
my mantra is sufficient.
So we don't need to do
that. I don't do. If I thought I needed to do, I would do. I don't do. On the faith that the holy name is sufficient. But some persons like, and that's in a personal way, they're approaching Lord Nrisimhadev, an incarnation of Krishna in a specific, with a specific mood in their heart, and he reciprocating with theirs. It's fine. It's fine. Someone else? Okay. You're all satisfied. Yes.
Yes. So initially, let's say someone has that enthusiasm, what are the factors or something which we should be careful about fading that enthusiasm at the later stages, like after some years? Like what are the some things we should be careful about or what happens actually?
What are the factors that bring about the diminishing of enthusiasm? Several things. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur speaks about submission, pranipat. And submission can slacken. So, in the beginning, like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, one may be enthusiastic, chaturvana maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. I'm suffering, I want relief from my suffering. Something, you know, so there's four. And I may be initially enthusiastic, and as I achieve those things, then my enthusiasm may wane. That's one. So the solution, beware of that pattern, and in place of trying to achieve those four things, one needs to consciously put in place taking shelter of Krishna. My relationship with Krishna takes the place of those four things. Now that's more subtle or more abstract or more spiritual. The others are more on the material side. But we need to take shelter of Krishna for that purpose of taking up devotional service. That needs to be put into place. Otherwise, enthusiasm can fade. There are other ways of saying similar things, which is conditional surrender as opposed to unconditional surrender, or conditional love, which isn't love, as opposed to unconditional love, which is love. Another way of, I describe that as accepting Krishna consciousness within the mind, as opposed to accepting Krishna consciousness from the platform of the soul. Very common is accepting from the platform of the mind. And we know the nature of the mind is accepting, rejecting, sankalpa, vikalpa, flickering. So enthusiasm can fade if our acceptance of Krishna consciousness has been from the mind. And say it again, that's common. So when the mind changes, the enthusiasm changes, the submission changes, and all kinds of things change, and then you need to be prepared. In fact, it's good that I could spring cleaning or, you know, hit the reset button and ask yourself again, like rejoin the Hare Krishna movement and say, what am I doing? So some purification will take place, and then when that purification takes place, the motivations that inspired me to get there are accomplished. Now what? What is my capacity to look at the practice of sadhana bhakti and the process of devotional service and Krishna will be different because my consciousness has changed. So recalibrate or reevaluate. Who am I? Same questions from now a fresh perspective. What is this? Why am I doing this? Is this what I really want? I mean, those aren't doubtful questions. They're self-searching questions. And that's good. And then you have a new perspective. Another, very important, is the person or persons from whom you receive principal guidance in Krishna consciousness. Those relationships must be very strong to have sustained enthusiasm. Say it the other way. If those relationships are not very strong, enthusiasm is going to go up and down a lot. Strong relationships. I'll say the same thing in a different way. Just saying the same thing. In the course of travel, one of the advantages or the vantage point from which a traveling person experiences is little snapshots of where people are, how they're doing. When you're living in a community, you see the same people every day. You don't see those it's incremental changes. Over a period of time, then a snapshot, over a period of time, a snapshot, over a period of time, a snapshot. You get a more of a picture of where people are, how they're doing, progressing, regressing, or whatever. My observation is, those that make the greatest advancement, a consistent factor in their life is they have very strong relationships with those persons that are guiding them. And the converse is also true. Those that don't have very strong relationships, they're not equally consistent in progressing in Krishna consciousness. So, and as progress requires enthusiasm, enthusiasm for what? If it's the chasing the carrot, that's how long can you do that? Be enthusiastic. But if it's something that's on a deeper level, relationship with Krishna and those that are close to Krishna, those that are the conduits through which Krishna is coming into my life, those are very important. And then within that realm, there's sustained enthusiasm. Another, it's a little more subtle, but being prepared to accept the challenges that Krishna places before you. If you chant nicely and enthusiastically, purification will take place, but also Krishna will give you service because you're asking for service. Please engage me in your service, and he gives you service. And my experience is, it's always more than what you have the capacity to handle. Always. And so then you strive to do your best to fulfill that service without neglecting core things. And as that capacity increases, then Krishna gives you more service. So being to rise to the occasion of challenges, good, the healthy kind of challenges in extending yourself in Krishna conscious ways to help the temple or serve the deities or something without compromising the essence of your vital sadhana. That helps you stay enthusiastic. Like, just a practical example for you to appreciate, I'm sure, and others. You're now doing some kind of programs where you're doing some teaching. Before you were doing those teaching, looking at the teaching was, oh my God, how can I do that, right? Every one of us. And you do the first time and you know, nervous, and you realize, I'm learning a lot. I'm learning more than I learned when I was just a student. And then, so it's enthusing. But then you can become familiar with that and say, oh, it's the same old. But it's not the same old. It's ever fresh because it's Krishna. And how can I do this better? I just got through with some exchange with one devotee where he was, I'm not just advocating more, but better. He was being asked in his temple area to do this, that, and the other thing. You know, take some title and, you know, be a big guy. And he was enthusiastic. And I said, well, that you can do that, but here's another approach you could take. Here, you now have an opportunity that you've been doing this something for some time. Do you feel you're doing it adequately? Are you doing that which can actually help the persons you're interacting with come in a strong way to a long-term, their college preacher, do a long-term commitment to Krishna consciousness, not just be a friend of Krishna somewhere down the road. Have you done that. And if you just, you know, have to a bunch of little things, are you going to be as satisfied and as productive and as enthused? So where is your enthusiasm going to come from? Look at it qualitatively, not just quantitatively. And then it's sustainable. I can't be happy just doing a bunch of things and not doing anything really in depth. So to stay enthused, those things that you do them in a quality way, and start with your japa in a quality way, and stay consistently focused on chanting, and then you'll be enthusiastic in your Krishna consciousness. And where's the end to chanting in a quality way? Like we heard Prabhupada speaking. So the spiritual conception, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, or wrote, sustained enthusiasm requires a spiritual conception. You'll see it tomorrow with 64 rounds. Without a spiritual conception, at some point, invariably, it'll become a struggle. Without a spiritual conception, you stay in a spiritual conception, it's easy to remain enthused, especially in the association we're going to be having tomorrow. Yes.
If we have certain issues in our regular life, say maybe in relationship, etc., though we know that we have to resolve that in our regular life apart from our chant, not just say, okay, I'm going to chant nicely and everything is taken care of. We have to do specific efforts to improve whatever mistakes we've made, etc. But at the same time, while chanting, also we would like to pray in a way that we can pray to Krishna and we can get his strength to do so, etc. So sometimes there is a confusion. It seems like either I should just chant and not really think of any other even major issues that I might be facing, which are affecting my spiritual life. But that seems impersonal. It seems like I should be personal in my chanting conversation. I'm really facing this problem, so I want to seek your shelter. But then that would distract us from focusing on the holy name, maybe sometimes.
Yes.
It
a lot depends on how controlled your mind is. It's really, 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 really easy to do, as you said, the next thing you know, you're no longer focused on, your mouth is still going, but your mind is on the other thing. The prayerful just got eclipsed into the mode of passion and fruitive and problem-solving mode. In a flash, the mind is there. So it depends on how much mind control and centeredness. Let's say the opposite. Have you not had the experience where something that's really pressing and it's consuming and consuming and consuming and you get depleted? You get beaten up by, you know, the issue, the whatever the thing is. And in other circumstances, you just, I'll address that over there, now I'm going to do this. It's not impersonal, it's just my function now is taking shelter of Krishna's holy name, and in the course of taking shelter of Krishna's holy name, somewhere down the road, something becomes very clear what to do. That pining and agonizing over the thing isn't going to, what to speak of the fresh consciousness with which to apply that inspiration. So it's, I don't see it as impersonal. I see it as a focused relationship. And our service with, our service unto Krishna is part of our relationship with Krishna. I mean, you know, the service, whatever may be other things that are part of our devotional service that are pressing and weighing in a conflict situation, that's part of our service to Krishna. Chanting is another part of our service to Krishna. It's not impersonal. It's quite personal. And I'll do that later. I'm thinking of I'm pausing thinking of a particular circumstance, and I don't know if it's how appropriate it is to go into it. There's a time and a place for each thing, and recognizing there's a time for joviality and just, you know, Krishna Katha, you know, that uplifting association kind of exchange, and at another time, something that's more serious and problem-solving nature with the same person. I'm thinking of... That's not impersonal. We're entering into or a revived relationship with Krishna. And I don't see chanting as a multi-processing time. And to think otherwise, that's impersonal. I'm not so good with that. Certainly being prayerful, something that's weighing and pressing and being prayerful, that's fine. It's a feeling with which you're offering to Krishna, but too easily it goes to this other place. Krishna is forgotten and the problem solving. It's me and the problem. And Krishna is, you know, somewhere outside. That's impersonal. Yeah. Sure. Let him ask a follow-up question.
Really, apart from chanting, was for a difficult situation, what should be your prayer like to Krishna?
Something like what in the presentation that Prema Trungini did is that's a time for a particular kind of prayer, praying to our acharyas for their mercy. And just appreciating them, how kind they are. So there may be some personal prayers time where you're doing like that. Krishna, my cares are yours because I'm submitting myself fully unto you. Manasa deha geha yo pichu mor. Everything that's mine is yours, including my problems. I'm your servant. You guide me, and I'll do as you guide me. Like that. You know, a personal prayer time. Last question. Then we're going to change gears.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for very informative sessions. A few months ago, Giriraj Maharaj gave Bhagavatam class in Vrindavan. And one of the ways he said for effective chanting, for having full attention, is to pay attention to first word Hare. And when you pay attention to Hare, then for the rest of the Mahamantra, your attention stays there. And then the next one, again for Hare, you have to bring your attention back. That works fine for me, but still, mind sometimes is not focused around it. So I don't count that particular beat where mind is not focused. It takes longer, but I try to do that. So is this the right thing to do, or doing additional counts is the right thing to do? Not count beat where mind is not focused?
Say it the other way around. Tell me one bead when your mind is focused. This is another Giriraj Maharaj story where he described, he was in Juhu, Prabhupada asked him to give class, and he was giving class, and during class he spoke something like, this happened, that happened, then and I fell in Maya, and Prabhupada interrupted and said, and then you fell in Maya. And then you fell in Maya. He said, you are always in Maya. So if you only counted those beads that you're focused, you'd have, 24-hour kirtan. 24-hour japa. And still have your prescribed rounds to chant. You can do like that. And that, that's not a wrong practice, or it's a nice practice. Another approach is, my dear Lord Krishna, this is my condition. You know my condition. Please accept. That doesn't mean, it's okay. From my side, let me continue to try to improve. Like that. Chant extra in different ways besides that one. But it's doable, sure. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Okay. I think what's supposed to happen now is we're going to have kirtan a bit, and then this surprise that's in the schedule will suddenly appear.